So I went to out to Edwards Air Force Base, test pilot school. Air Force sent me for a master's degree on the way. And then I was a test pilot. So I was flying as a test pilot, loved the job, absolutely loved it, doing engineering flying and flying multiple different aircraft. And then I found myself actually eligible for the astronaut program, and I hadn't really thought about it. But I had a bunch of friends that were applying, and I got to thinking about it. I said, well, they do kind of what I'm doing as a test pilot, where they combine engineering and science, which I love, and flying, just a little bit faster, a little bit higher. And so I decided to apply, and I was fortunate to get accepted, and so that's how I ended up where I am.
I wanted to fly for the military when I was in ROTC in college, but I didn't have good eyes. They're still not that good. And so I became an infantryman in the Army. But I always wanted to fly, and I don't know exactly why. While I was assigned to a military base in Germany, they had a flying club, so I decided to go and learn to fly. And I learned to fly over there and got my private pilot's license. When I came back to the States, I discovered the GI Bill would pay for more of my flying training, so I used that to help me get my instrument rating. And then I just was a good general aviation pilot. But I found it was expensive to rent airplanes, and I started looking around for other things, and I discovered the world of experimental airplanes, home builders, that you could build your own airplane. And I thought about the BD-5. Luckily, they went out of business before I invested any money in it. And then I came to Oshkosh in 1980, and I walked down the line, and I saw a very easy. And I said, wow, if I were going to design an airplane, that's what it would look like. And so I got interested. Then I found out they had a little bigger version, the Long Easy, and I got the plan, started building. And so today I fly a Long Easy that I built, and I've been flying it for 27 years and have lots of time in it. And I've had the chance to fly a lot of other aircraft, some through the military. I got to go to the Navy test pilot school as an engineer and fly a lot of their airplanes and helicopters. And I got to fly with the Army in helicopters, not as a pilot, but as an engineer. But I got a lot of training from my buddies, and I've flown with a lot of fellow astronauts in the T-38, where they coached me and gave me some training and helped me to be a better pilot. And that's kind of my flying background. I still, today I fly a Cirrus if I'm going somewhere, but I fly for fun in my Long Easy, and I still spend an awful lot of time, like many of you do, puttering around my hangar, working on my Long Easy, or just finding something else to make it better.
All right.
How about Paul?
Well, yeah, I can say, I started flying when I was 13, I think, and got the opportunity to help rebuild a couple of J-3 Cubs, and we worked on them every couple nights a week, and for every 2 hours that we worked on them, we got an hour of flight time for gas and oil. So I had my pilot's license when I was a junior in high school, went to the University of Minnesota for an aeronautical engineering degree, I had my commercial ticket, and then I'd planned to go to work just up the road at Belanca up in Alexandria, Minnesota, and then I heard that they'd gone bankrupt, And I saw this opportunity posted on the bulletin board to apply to NASA as a co-op. Well, crushed because I wasn't going to be able to design and build airplanes. I figured, well, I'd take my second choice and do this NASA application as a co-op student. And they accepted me, so I went down to Houston, and they threw me into this operations group, which is mission control. I asked later on why they put me there rather than one of the engineering disciplines, and they said, well, you were a pilot, and I was working my way through college as a scuba diver, and they said, so you really do know what it takes to put your own little pink body on the line, and we want you making those kind of decisions. So I was in mission control for a dozen years as a flight controller, and then for 20 years as flight director. But all this time I was flying, I had a Yankee for 20 some years, and then I got into this RV-8 project that I really loved, and now in my hangar I have the RV-8 I built, the RV-6 that I met my wife because she had an RV-6. We built an RV-3 together, which is a single-seater, and then we built a big old bush plane, a Dream Tundra, and then recently I built a little jet, a little single-engine jet we had here 2 years ago. So all the time that I was doing mission control, I was spending an awful lot of time at the airport tinkering with airplanes, and that's really my first love. And I think when people say, you know, oh, you're a space nut, I say, well, I'm really not a space nut, I'm an airplane nut, and the shuttle was the fastest, highest flying airplane ever built.
I'm shocked you weren't spending more time focusing on our missions.
Yeah, I was
thinking.
Once
in a while we would do that. I mean, you know, I was either at the hangar or I was in the control center. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought, Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
A little concerned.
Yeah. But it all worked out.
It might explain a few things, but I'm not sure.
The truth is finally revealed. Okay. All right. Paul, I do have a question. You talked a little bit about this, but how did your aviation experiences influence and how do you think it influenced your performance in mission control, particularly during shuttle?
Well, there's no question that being a pilot, being in aviation, loving everything aviation influences the way you interact with the spacecraft and, more importantly, with the crew. In the early days of rocket aircraft at Edwards, they developed the idea of mission control when they were flying the X-15, basically. And they would have a flight director who was one of the pilots that wasn't flying that day for the X-15. And so you got this very good connection between the ground control and the crew. And then the early flight directors in Apollo, a lot of them were military pilots. Gene Kranz was a military pilot. Chris Kraft was a flight test guy. And so we always tried to have that rapport with you guys if we could. And it's important, I felt, for the guys in the cockpit to know that the guys on the ground had some understanding, that knew that we had some understanding of what we were asking you to do.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Now here's kind of a softball question, but it still will be a lot of fun. So, not many of us, except some of the people on stage, have experienced this. But let's walk through liftoff. What is it like, you know, the night before? What's going through your mind in the moment of? And Paul, you can also elaborate on this from your perspective as somebody as the flight director, helping to control the first stages of the mission.
You know, if it's someone else who was launching, I was usually pretty nervous about watching somebody else launch into space. But when I was launching, it was always pretty calm. The crews were pretty well calm and relaxed. There is a little bit of banter going back and forth usually in the cockpit before you launch, and that's maybe the nervousness that's showing up. But I think that the intense training, the years of training that astronauts have, prepare them for that time psychologically, as well as understanding all the procedures and the emergency procedures and things like that. So you've done things so many times, and it seems just like you're training until the moment of launch. Of course, that's a little bit different then. But up until that point, everything is fairly calm, and then it's pretty exciting after that.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start the night before. Obviously, you're prepared, you're trained as a crew, you're ready to go. You've been down in Florida, and you've been in quarantine for a week. We always went in medical quarantine for a week before launch, primarily to protect us against, like, if somebody gets a cold or something like that, you don't want to take that into space. So we're in medical quarantine. We've been basically separated from our friends and our family, including our immediate family. The only people that could really see us when we were down in Florida were our spouses. And so we would, you know, be ready to go. We had a place called the Beach House out at Kennedy Space Center. And that when we were in quarantine, that was the only safe place we could go besides crew quarters, which is like it's like Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. but we could actually go to the Beach House. And so we'd go to the Beach House and meet our spouses. And so we always did this thing the night before. We say goodbye to our spouses for the last time. And we called it the kiss and cry. So then we would leave them. And it was actually, that was a difficult thing for the families and you know, to say goodbye and knowing that you got to go do this thing. You get up the next morning, and we're always at the end of a sleep shift. We always sleep shifted for most of the flights. You get up the next morning, and you're, like I said, the crew's pretty relaxed. You get up about, kind of depending on the sleep shift, but, you know, a few hours before you're going to suit up. They have your suits there. You suit up. You head out to the launch pad, and they actually strap you in about, on the space station mission, is like 3 hours prior to launch. And so you're on your back, and what I always tried to do, and I always flew in the pilot's seat or the commander's seat, I tried to completely relax in there, knowing my job, and I, pretty much every flight, I took a nap when I got strapped in. And so I just fell asleep for a while, and then I woke up, and then everything's pretty calm, everything's pretty slow, until about 9 minutes prior to launch, and then it gets crazy.
I'm glad you were able to sleep. Usually, you know, when you're in the shuttle, you're laying on your back with your feet up. It's like laying in a straight back chair on the floor. And for some reason, that makes you need to pee. And so I never took a nap because I was always fighting the need to use my diaper.
Just use it.
It was hard psychologically. The hardest psychological thing is peeing in your diaper.
And he's absolutely right, because you actually start fluid shifting when you're laying on your back with your legs up like that. So we wore the diapers. But you had to get over it psychologically. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there in pain for like 3 hours. And so here's how I got over that. When we were in astronaut candidate training, we had to suit up and go into the mock-up and do all that kind of with the suits. And I had a bet with one of the guys in my class that I could pee before he could. And so we're suited up and we're in the pre-brief, and then they're talking about what they're going to do. And he and I have like 3 cups of coffee. We're just pounding coffee. And so I think, I don't remember who won. I think we kind of tied, but we both got over it. So that's, you know, if you ever decide to train and do that, that's a little tip for you.
So Paul, did you and Mission Control have the same kind of thing? You guys were slamming coffee and...
Before launch, you could pretty much get up and wander out of the control center and back out to the restroom, which is just outside the door. Once we launched, it was intense in the control center. I mean, everybody's looking at data. Everything happens in 8.5 minutes, and then it gets a little bit slower, so you're constantly doing that.